church has changed so much. We watched that video, and it's cute at the end, the guy giving us the A-OK down there. But how many of you grew up with video in church? You know, when you really think about it, how much has church really changed? I mean, today is very different than 50 years ago. A lot like other things have changed 50 years ago. But I think about how people had their Sunday best. I've heard stories about that. I was not raised in the church. So, and I guess, you know, you wore your best. And Pastor Dave told me that if you were part of a family, you went to church. It wasn't optional in his household. And so nowadays we're very different in how we approach church. But I think about all the things that have changed. I think about how cars have changed, how they were much more simple 50 years ago, where you could pop the hood and everything was pretty much the same. Now you pop the hood and you're like, I don't even know what that is in there, because it has computers and everything else in it. And I think about ice cream. Recently, I went to buy my daughter some ice cream, and I could not believe the choices of ice cream, and that you can not only buy ice cream, but you can also buy gelato and soy ice cream and almond milk ice cream, and there's just too many choices. And I think about televisions, where we had this box and the screen was kind of small and we actually all could see it, but now we have to have these monster screens and they're getting bigger and bigger and flatter and flatter. And when you think about it, we actually can pull them out at any time because the television is on our phones, and we, for those of us who need to watch it on a regular basis, can pull it out and watch TV. And so it's interesting. I mean, think about the phone even. When I was growing up, the phone was on the wall. That's where it stayed. If you were lucky, you had another one somewhere on the counter or maybe in your room. But remember when it would ring, you would actually like run to get it and hope it was for you. You had no idea who was calling. And when you picked it up and another person picked it up too, and you're like, get off the phone, it's for me, you know? And so just kind of interesting. And the answering machine and how you'd see the red light blink and you're like, oh, someone called, but I don't know who it was. And nowadays we look at our phones and not only do we see who's calling, we decide whether or not we want to talk to them. We can text, and we can even see if they're texting us back. And some people forget to turn off their read receipts, so you can even see if they've read your text message. So it's just kind of interesting how things have changed over time. And technology is definitely changing the way we do relationships, the way we connect with each other. It's interesting to me to look at technology today. It gives us this sense of bravery, I guess. I'm amazed at what I've been seeing lately on Facebook and different things like that. The challenge is to just kind of read the negativity, kind of the angry words, the things that are out there, and just not let it affect you. But it's like technology gives us this sense of courage. Like, I wouldn't say it to your face, but I definitely would maybe throw that out there, and then that way I don't have to see your reaction. But think about how we do that. Are we really relating to others? And so I think about our relationships just in general. It's what I do for a living. But I think to myself, how did we meet those who we are closest to? Think about who you're really, really close to. How did you meet them? I mean, for some of you, you'd say, well, I met them at church, or I met them in school. Maybe we grew up together, the grocery store. But other people nowadays would say, well, we met online, or we met in a chat room, or we met it through video games, or whatever it is. We have these dating websites where you can stick in your criteria of who you want, I guess. I've never done it, but I've heard the stories about you stick in your stuff of what you want, and I guess it spits out possibilities, and so you can connect that way. And people who have spent time online, and that's how they met. Our world is so changing through technology and through how we deal with each other. But there's something that doesn't change. If you really think about it, there is one element, no matter how we meet people, no matter how we do relationships, there is something that will never change. And that is the glue, is what Stephen Covey would call it. In his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, he called it the glue, and that is trust. And he said this about it. He said, trust is the glue of life. It's the most essential ingredient in effective communication. It's the foundational principle that holds all relationships. And isn't that true? Isn't it true that without trust, we don't have a relationship with someone? I mean, trust, that absolute firm belief that someone's character, their words, everything that they're doing, their strength, their ability, that they're going to stand there and they're going to stand firm, and we believe that they have our back and we have theirs. We trust that they're genuine, that what they think and what they say matches their actions. And so it's hard to have relationships if we don't have that. We were going through this series and we've talked about communication. Think about how we talk to one another if we don't have trust. If you don't trust someone, do you really tell them everything? Do you give them your feelings and your emotions? No. We've been talking about going deeper. And so if we don't have trust and communication, you're not going to be in the water there. You're probably not even going to be on the surface. You're just going to be in a boat waiting to see if you should even get on the surface with someone else. I think about conflict. It's so hard to resolve it if we don't have trust because we don't feel safe. We don't feel secure with the other person to really deal with the conflict. Integrity, if you don't have it, obviously we're not trusting you. If your actions and your words don't match up, it's really hard to deal with that. And then forgiveness, that's a really hard one. Think about if you don't trust them, is it easy to forgive them? It's super difficult. We usually hold grudges. We end up building walls between us, and we end up having this happen where we move away from each other because we just don't believe that they really can be forgiven, that we don't believe that they won't do it again. Our trust has been broken so much. So what we see is this amazing element. No matter how time changes, if we're going to relate to one another, there has to be trust as the foundation of what we stand on and who we are made up of. It has to be in our foundation. We have to be trustworthy people in order to have a relationship with another. And as I was studying this and looking at this concept, I was looking and I came across this. It says, a relationship without trust is like a car without gas. You can stay in it as long as you want, but it's not going anywhere. It's true. You can stay in a relationship all you want, but if you don't have trust, you are not going to go any deeper. You're not going to come together. There's not going to be a lot of glue. It's just going to be shallow and surfacey, and it's just eventually probably going to break apart because you're not going to want to spend time investing in someone that you don't trust. And so what we're going to look at today is this concept of how do not only do we trust others, but how do we become trustworthy people? And so I thought, well, what does God want us to be? Who does he expect us to be when we relate to another person? How are we supposed to act? And what I found is in Colossians 3, verse 12, it says this. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another at if any of I've been sick, so I'm like all over the place. Anyone, if you have a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you, and over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you were called to peace, and be thankful. So what he's saying to us is that we need to go to him. We need to go to him and we need to fill up with this gentleness, this kindness. We should be treating people with patience and not be the same as those who do not know the Lord. Do we realize that when we take the time to go to him, to unite together, to treat each other with respect, that we will find that peace that we're looking for? We find this solid sense of, I did the best I know how to do. We become trustworthy people because our actions follow our words. Sometimes we won't even need to say anything because we walk out our faith. We walk out the love that he fills us up with. We end up having all these qualities in a relationship because we've spent time with him. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to look at how to deal with ourselves, how to become trustworthy people. That way we can end up having deeper, growing relationships with one another and more importantly with God. So the first thing that we're going to look at is that trust takes courage. Trust takes courage. Why does it take courage? Well, what are we doing when we're trusting? We're not just in our heads going around saying, I'm just going to trust everybody. You know, whatever you do, it doesn't bother me. No, that doesn't matter. I just trust you. No matter what your actions are, trust does not mean that you become a doormat. Trust means that you have this positive feeling, knowledge, knowing that the other person is going to be who they say they are, and that we are too. Trust takes vulnerability. It takes courage. You are showing not only your thoughts, but your emotions. Think about the times that you've taken the risk and you've said to someone something that you haven't maybe said to somebody else. For the first time, you confess something to someone else. It's because you trust them. We let them within on our emotions, even though they might not know us very well, or maybe they don't know that we have this difficulty. We take a risk and we share it and we show it because we believe that they are trustworthy. But then it goes both ways. We also have to be trustworthy people. Vulnerability is hard. Because to give someone our thoughts and our emotions, to let down our guards and let someone in, what we are becoming susceptible to what? Our biggest worries, judgment. We judge ourselves. We are so hard on ourselves. We don't need anybody else to tell us how bad we are. We have a struggle with the way we look at ourselves. Usually we have this unending account of how many times we've messed up. So to give that away, to let someone else into our lives is very difficult because we know where we've been. We know what we've done. We know our past. We know our thoughts. We know our struggles and we know our addictions. To let someone in is a huge risk. It takes courage. In Psalm 40, it reads like this. Lord, do not hold back your mercy from me. Let your love and truth always protect me. Troubles have surrounded me. There are too many to count. My sins have caught me so that I cannot see a way to escape. I have more sins than hairs on my head, and I have lost my courage. Please, Lord, save me. Hurry, Lord, to help me. We know how much we have messed up. We know what we struggle with. And what he's saying is Lord, he's saying, everyone, I know that we struggle. I struggle, but we've got to go to him. That's where we go to work out who we are, to create this trust, this courage, so we can be vulnerable with others. We have to go to God and say, here I am. Here's all of me. Here is my struggles, my worries, my frustration, my love for things that you don't love. Take it away from me. Help me. And he's saying, come quickly. Save me because I know myself. That's what we all need to do every day, is to come to him and say, here I am. I'm a mess. Can you fix it? He can. He'll take it and he'll tell you that he loves you. I think about the video that the ladies were talking about for Women's Night of Worship, and how those cardboards, the courage it takes to put yourself out there. And I know they're not verbally saying it, but like slave to perfection. It takes a vulnerability, a courage, a trust of all those other ladies in that room. That if I tell someone that I'm a slave to perfection, that you're not going to judge me, that you're not going to hurt me, that you're not going to identify me with my shortcomings. They're being vulnerable and they're being courageous, because the other thing they're going to do is they're going to flip those over and we're going to see how God is great. And how he changes that sin, and how he breaks through those addictions and those thought processes. And we all have a testimony. It takes courage. Earlier, I brought up that we have technology, and we feel courage because we can throw out what we really feel about something. We can say sharp little things over the internet because we're not looking at someone. Well, I think about how times have changed. And we date even online, and we can send someone a text and say, hey, will you go out with me? But a long time ago, I bet you there's a lot of men in here who remember the days where you would have to go to someone's home, and you would knock on the door because you were interested in a girl. And who opened the door? Dad. And the days where you would have to account for who you are, and what family you belong to, and what you were doing with your life, and what were your intentions. And I asked myself, what takes more courage? To go to that door and to knock on it, and to go and say, I want to date your daughter, and do the whole drill thing and be stared down the whole time? Or is it courage really look like sending out some kind of hateful or ugly thing over the internet because you don't have to look a person in the eye? We have to remember that technology has a tendency to fool ourselves. It gives us this idea that we have this ability to just be honest. But I don't know how much respect is in all of that. I don't know how much love is in all of that. See, we know that the other person can't see us and we don't see them. But you know who's looking all the time? It's God. He knows the motives of our heart. He knows where it's coming from. We still have this ability and this need. It's an absolute need to respect one another. And that's something that I don't see or hear much anymore. In the Bible, it talks about this. In 1 Peter 2:17, it says, show respect for all people. Love the brothers and sisters of God's family. Respect God. Honor the king. do we forget that it's actually not optional? But I hear people tell me I don't have to respect them. They have to earn my respect. I hear it a lot. I don't have to give respect. Respect me first, then I'll respect you. But what does that do? We have this huge gap between us and them. And as believers, God is saying, show respect. And where does it come from? We respect him first. We come to him and we realize that respect is something that needs to pour out of us. And some of us are approaching relationships flipped the other way. I don't have to show you respect until you earn it. The reality is we need to respect all people. So maybe some of us need to change the lens that we're looking through and look at people differently, because when we start respecting people, we have a tendency to start loving people. We have a tendency to start bridging those gaps. And so what he's asking us to do is to change, to go what he wants, to go where he wants us to go, to look at people differently and to relate to one another differently. In Proverbs 3:5-6, it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him and he will make your path straight. See, we need the Lord first. We need to come to him and say, here we are, so he can make our path straight, so we can learn how to navigate relationships when they're hard and they're difficult, or when we like someone and we're not really gifted in being social. He will make our path straight. He will make us courageous, because he will give us the ability to trust. Do we know that faith in God, experiencing God, having that faith, knowing that he's there even though we don't see him, but we see the experiences we have with him. We see how he changes lives. Faith plus the hope that this isn't as good as it gets. He's in control. We can feel out of control, but he is in control. Faith plus hope equals trust. Experience with God plus that hope leads us to start loving God, which then starts leading us to trusting God. That exact same experiences can happen with people. We can start having deeper relationships if we just take the time. We have the courage to put ourselves out there, to trust him and let him fill us up, and we overflow with how he's changed us to others. People become curious as to why we're different and not like the rest of the world. The next thing I want to look at is that trust takes time. It takes time, doesn't it? We don't usually just walk up to people and just be like, I trust you. There are those people. There is a group of people, I would say, that have the tendency to walk in and they would tell you, I trust everyone, until you break it. But then there's another group of people who would say, I trust no one until you prove to me that you're trustworthy. And it doesn't really matter which group you come from. What matters is the breaking of trust. It takes time to rebuild, because trust does something to us. See, if we start off on a clean slate with someone else, as smooth as we can get, relationship's going good, but when we break that trust, we start to fold inward. We feel the damage. It starts to hurt us, and if the trust keeps getting broken, we start to pull in and pull away. But then we start working on forgiving them, and they ask us to trust them, and I won't do it again. So we try to unfold, and we try to re-smooth out the relationship and make it all better. And no matter how hard you try to smooth it and make it good, what's still there? The impact, the scar, the ripple and the wrinkles in the relationship, they do not go away. Trust is so important. You might be able to find healing and move on, but the scars of having broken trust last a very long time. And so when we talk about this, it's not just because it's just some random element that has in a relationship. Do we understand what it's like to have it broke? To have someone betray us? it really hurts because then it causes doubt. And then we start doubting if we're really going to be good again. And then we start becoming little detectives because we become suspicious. We start to wonder, do they really, really mean it? That they want forgiveness, that they're sorry, that we're going to be better. But we become detectives, and we only pretty much become detectives of finding what is wrong. When you ever have been in a relationship, dating, marriage, whatever it is, and someone cheats or they break it, have you ever watched the other spouse or been that person who says, it seems like everything they do, I'm looking for them to mess up again. I keep watching for all the weirdness that's happening because that trust, we go into survival mode. Because what happens is we become anxious and fearful. And then we don't know that the relationship's going to really make it. So then we start to hunker down. And instead of living the relationship, we survive it. And so what happens is this starts to pull apart. And we start to wonder, is there any healing that is possible in this situation? I'm here to tell you, yes. God is greater than every single one of us. He is greater than our emotions. He is greater than our words. He is greater than our thought process. So there is hope. But I don't want us to believe that just because he brings healing, just because he will forgive us, that we can't take this seriously. Because breaking trust, we have to relate to one another. And so these wrinkles and these scars, they will stay there. But we can become whole again. We can become healed and have relationships. So one of the things I tell people is you want to not walk up to the person you offended and ask them all the time, so do you trust me now? How about now? Like, I have people come into my office and they're like, okay, so it's been like last time we were here, she still doesn't trust me. So is it now today? I'm over this. You know, I want us to move on. How many times do I have to come here before we all trust each other again? We have to remember that the healing process for the offender and the healing process for the person who received the offense can be very different. And so we have to give each other time. And my recommendation is don't ask for trust. Let our actions show that we become trustworthy people. Build it. Earn it. Go to the Lord and say, I have broken it. Heal me. Flow through me. So the one that I disrespected, the one that I hurt, the one that I sinned against, will see that you have brought healing to me. You have changed me. And so we can come together, work in both of us, but the processes can be different. How do we become these trustworthy people? Always running to him. In Ephesians 4:15, it says, instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become, in every respect, the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. Speaking the truth in love. We go to him and we figure out what the truth is. It's in the word. We pray, we worship, we know. But some of you speak the truth all the time, and that's great. But sometimes it comes across like a dart to the head. Think about, we're forgetting the truth in love. Now, we can't deal with the other person. We can't base our words on how someone else is going to react. If they receive something and it's truth and love and they spin around like a top, that's their issue. But we have to remember that we have to stand before the Lord for all that we say and all that we do. And so we want to be able to say to him that I said and did the best I knew how to do. And so you feel like you were and know that you were spoke the truth in love. Because what we forget to say to people sometimes, hey, I love you. I am so glad to be in your life, but I got to tell you this. But I love you. Don't hear it any other way, but here's the truth. Sometimes we just throw it at someone and we wonder why they're offended. Because truth does hurt, but the Bible's clear that we need to speak it in love. The other way that we become trustworthy people is in 1 John 4:16, and it says, and so we know and rely on the love of God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in them. We figure out how to love people by letting him love on us first. If we run to him and love him, we'll know how to have that tolerance and that patience. Love is what we are trying to do. God is love. We want all people to know God, so we have to show that. The other one interesting aspect I run across when I was studying this on how to build trust and how it takes time was in Proverbs 24, 26. An honest answer is like a kiss on the lips. See, I know that we have to have honesty and we have to speak truth and we have to be trustworthy, but an honest answer is like a kiss on the lips. Saying that honest words are so intimate. Do we realize that every time we say something and it's the truth and we are honest, that we are building a bond, we're adding that glue to our relationships and we're going deeper. A kiss on the lips. Think about who you kiss in life. Hopefully you don't kiss everyone. That's a different issue. But kiss, we kiss those that we trust, those that we love, those that we have this bond with. So a kiss can be so intimate. Even when we have a kiss on the head from someone that we respect, we realize that they are trusting us. We are close. We are intimate. Honest words. We are pouring into a relationship that will continue to grow. Trust is so important to God. It is so important to God. In Brennan Manning's book, he wrote in the book, Ruthless Trust, trust is our gift back to God, and he finds it so enchanting that Jesus died for love of it. Do we realize that Jesus, all he was asking is trust in me. Give me everything. Give me your life. Trust in me. He wanted it so badly that he died for it. It's so important because the only way to have a relationship is to have that be in the foundation. Everything is held up on that. See, life is going to change. The way we do relationships will probably change even more. I mean, think about how technology's changed everything, how we communicate with one another. Things will continue to change. I can't imagine what will change in the future. I never knew it would look like this when I was younger. But no matter what changes in life, no matter how church changes, no matter how people change or how we connect, trust will always be necessary. And the greatest amount of trust that we can ever have is in God himself. Putting our lives in Jesus, every day I challenge us to take the time to say, here I am. Whether you feel like a train wreck or you feel awesome, say, here I am, fill me up, keep molding me, changing me, take off the rough edges, because I want to be the person that people want to relate to, because what I want to be is the creation that God made me to be. If we've broken trust and you're aware of that, if you're struggling with that now, please don't say to yourself that you want things to be the way they were. And I bring that up because a lot of times people measure whether or not things are going to be okay after broken trust by whether or not things go back to the way they were. I hear it all the time. I just want us to be okay. I just want it to go back to the way it was. I don't know that God's asking us to chase the past. Is God asking us to chase who we were? No, he's asking us to chase who he's created us to be. We don't strive for what was. We strive for what is to come. And so today, as we close, the action that I would love for you guys to take is, if you went through this series, was there something that hit you? Was God poking at you because you need to work on communication or forgiveness or dealing with conflict or dealing with trust? Just because we move on to the next series, which is going to be about going through the book of Ephesians, learning and having immeasurably more with him. Do not stop the process of learning and what he was poking at and what he wanted you to take away. You can go online and you can see the sermons. You can study your notes. You can dive in. This was not a series that just needed a title name called Going Deeper or Getting Beneath the Surface. We as New Life Church and the body of Christ, we want to be deep with God. We want to be so deep with God that we have so much courage that we will relate to others. So as we close, I'd like us to stand. We're going to pray. I want to give us all to Him, that we would have the courage to trust and go deeper. If you need prayer after this, come on up. We will have people up here to pray with you. But let's pray together. Lord, I thank you for this time. I thank you for this place that we come and then we gather and then we purposely make the point to come and hear your word, to hear what you have to say to us, to worship together, to be with our brothers and sisters. Lord, may we walk away today holding fast, standing strong on the truth of your word, that we know that our identity is in you. That we can tell and proclaim the goodness of God the Father, who changes our lives, who can take our weirdness and flip it over, and we can tell a story of redemption, of forgiveness, and of freedom. And so, Lord, I give all of us to you. We need you. Every moment of every day, we need you. And so be with us, and may we continue to give you praise and glory and honor as the body of Christ, as brothers and sisters. Continue to mold us. So I give you everyone here, and everyone said, amen. Have an awesome day. If you need prayer, come on up.